So the question is, but do you want any of this stuff? Is this the future of food you guys want? You know, do you want flu-fighting milk? Do you want ice cream with omega-3s and hot dogs with omega-3s? Is that actually helping people be healthier? Debatably so, right? Do you want cows making human breast milk? You know, I don't know if I want that one. Do you want a personal scanning code? Now, these are all things you have to consider. Like, do you want this stuff, right? So is any of that even healthy? It's a good question. But not everything is so scary, right? You're going to view it as like a food continuum. Some things are on one end, like the banana chips made from, you know, the gluten-free pasta made from banana chips. Is that going to harm anybody's health? No. No, but it's a direction things are going. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the flu-fighting milk. You have, you know, stem cell meat, things that are maybe a little scarier. You know, you're not really sure. There's no long-term data. You know, everyone's been eating bananas for a long time. We haven't been eating meat that we grew from stem cells at all. Okay, so that's questionable. But you have to view it. It's not all black and white. It's not all or none. There are some things that are cool and some things that might not be. Because we've been genetically selecting and genetically modifying crops for as long as humans have domesticated plants, so for thousands of years. We'd pick a trait that we liked, whether it tasted good or grew easily, and we'd pick that one and we'd plant that one, and we'd roll with that. Or they would combine, you know, a plant like this trait, variety like a trait from, combine them, breed them, to get a specific combination. Right? We've been doing that for thousands of years. The genetic modification they're doing today is not all that dissimilar, it's just a little more direct, and they kind of insert a gun in there and shoot the genes they want. That's actually one exact method of how they do it. You know, it's a little more intense, a little more rapid, maybe a little scarier because they're putting in genes from other plants and things like that. But we've been modifying stuff for a long time. For example, today we specifically breed high oleic sunflower oil. Sunflower oil is normally really high in polyunsaturated fats, really high in omega-6s, right? But we've actually created a line just through genetic selection and through proper breeding that creates a high oleic one that's high in oleic acid, in omega-9, which is the fatty acid found in olive oil. Okay, so this is actually a fairly healthy oil, but it's not done through DNA modification on a human scale. It's done through DNA modification on a breeding scale. So it's not all that dissimilar, but we've been doing stuff like it for a long time. So we're going to be doing more stuff like that too. Not everything is quite so freaky. And everyone's favorite question, are GMOs actually healthy, right? Who knows? It depends on who you ask. If you ask a lot of governments and government organizations, they'll tell you yes. They're stringently tested. You know, we have all this data on them, X, Y, and Z. The FDA will always kind of back them up. Other governments who allow them will tell you they're okay. But you have a very leery public. You know, they don't have to be labeled. So unless something is organic, you don't know if it has GMOs or not, which freaks some people out. However, you also have some leery scientists. Okay, when the FDA recently came out and had released some statement talking about the safety of GMOs, a group of 20 scientists wrote a letter to the FDA saying, well, your research kind of sucks. They didn't really buy the clinical trials, thought they weren't. They had some flaws in their design, because a lot of them are funded by the companies who do the genetic modification, which doesn't necessarily mean they're bad studies, it just raises red flags, right? And there's another scientist, a Spanish toxicologist, who talked about the World Health Organization put out a statement saying, you know, all the genetically modified crops in the international market have all been tested, you know, for risk assessments by different countries and their own organizations. None of them showed any harm to human health. Okay, but this guy said, pointed out, that's awesome. But if you look at the review studies on humans and animal trials on the health effects of eating genetically modified crops, there's like no data. There's like no published data. Like, it just doesn't exist. It's like, and it's very possible that these companies are doing studies, presenting them to the FDA or whomever, and not publishing them. That happens all the time. There's like three times as much unpublished work as there is published. They don't have to publish it. That actually costs them money to put it in a journal. They probably don't feel like it's necessary, because how many of your clients are going to go read a study about the testing of GMOs? Probably none. You know, so they don't really, maybe they don't worry about it. But it's hard to know, because they're telling us they're safe, and they're telling us there's data, but they're not showing us the data. So it just raises red flags, right? So I think at the end of the day, we don't have an answer. They've been out for a long time. Nothing seems to have rapidly changed in us. You can use that as evidence, but the jury's still out. Okay, on one hand, you have people saying there's lots of information, they're safe. On the other hand, people are saying, where is the information? They're not so safe. So no one really knows, but it's the direction things are heading. So I think if you want more information, you gotta push for it. So as a fitness professional, why should you care about all this? You know, what do you really care about the future of food? Well, one, as a consumer of food, you should probably care. You should know what you're going to be eating, know what direction things are going to be heading. And two, you know, if your clients come to you, because your clients are going to read nutrition information in all kinds of strange places, in their Cosmopolitan magazine and Us Weekly, and there's nutrition information everywhere, right? So if they're reading about this stuff, they read an article about the future of food, and they come to you and ask you about it, and you have no idea what they're talking about, you're going to look like an idiot, right? You're going to lose credibility in their eyes, and losing credibility sucks. However, if you're moderately educated, you can talk about the cool stuff I talked about today, you sound like a nutrition expert, right? So you gain credibility in their eyes. They're going to come to you with more nutrition questions, which can lead to one or two cool things. One, it could be a new revenue stream. You know, you can do nutrition talks and get them to do food logs for you and take that in a different direction. Or two, it just leads to better client buy-in because they have you have more credibility in their eyes. Better buy-in leads to more consistency, leads to better results, leads to more clients, right? That's an awesome thing. We all want that. So having said that now, what do you actually tell your clients to eat? How should you recommend your clients, you know, fill their day with their nutrition? What should they do on a daily basis? First and foremost, I like to recommend the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, stupid. People like to make nutrition out to be so complicated. You know, do carb backloading, do intermittent fasting, do a super low-fat Ornish diet, super low-carb Atkins diet, innumerable high-level things. How many of your clients actually need that? Maybe a handful, you know? You have a few clients who are really super passionate about it, and we're really passionate about it, so we do this stuff. But our clients are not us. They don't come to seminars like this. They're not interested in learning all of this stuff, right? So they already have busy, hectic lives. They have kids. They have a 60-hour a week job. They're super stressed. They already view good nutrition as complicated and challenging. You don't need to make it more so. It can actually be really simple, right? So we want to get down to reasonable, manageable things they can implement in their daily lives that'll make a difference. You know, they don't need to carb backload or skip breakfast. Can those things work? All those things can work. They can all be awesome, but they're generally not for everybody, you know? So we need to keep that big picture in mind. So what do we actually recommend? You know, this can be stuff you've all heard before, but mastering the basics with your clients will get you the best results. You want to focus on lean proteins, you know, focus on vegetables, be reasonable with starches and fruits, be reasonable with healthy fats, and focus on whole foods. You know, why do you think we want these things? We want to ensure adequate protein intake without them having to actually count their protein grams. We want to ensure a high level of intake of produce for the fiber, phytonutrients, antioxidants, things we haven't even discovered yet. You know, we want to ensure a reasonable amount of starches and fruit to help them meet their training needs and everyday demands, but not going so overboard, you know, that they're consuming too much because they're easily overly consumed. You know, it's not too hard to sit down and eat a big plate of pasta. So I just want to be reasonable with that stuff. But if you start saying you can't have any bread with lunch because you didn't just train and that sandwich is going to make you fat, that's crazy. Man, people look at you like you're nuts. And are two slices of bread what's in between your client from reaching their goals? More than likely not, right? So you want to be just reasonable. Things that they can manage that will still help them reach their goals, but they can enjoy and that they're willing to do. Same thing with healthy fats. It can be really easy. Oh, you know, nuts are healthy. So you'll have clients go pound down like a cup of nuts for a meal. Like, well, they're pretty calorie dense. Like, they're good for you, but they can be really easy to overconsume. So it's just about being reasonable, okay? And focusing on whole foods. You know, I think we kind of covered why that's important earlier. But you want to get, you know, you get all your phytonutrients, antioxidants, fiber, vitamins, minerals, I mean, you name it. And they're far harder to overconsume. All right, you eat a boiled potato or you eat some white pasta, which is going to be easier for you to eat more of? You know, things that are refined. They tend to go down easier. They're more rewarding and more palatable to your brain. You're going to want to crush them a lot more than you want to crush a boiled potato or something like that. So how do we actually do this? How do we put this in action? What does a meal actually look like with those recommendations? So at PN, what we generally recommend, what works really well, is to use your hand as your source for your calorie counting, right? As your portion guide. For a bigger person, you have big hands, you get to eat more food. You're a smaller person, you have small hands, you eat less. It's perfectly scaled to the size of the individual. And there are obviously people, big people with small hands and small people with big hands, but you know, you can adjust as needed. That's the beauty of this setup, right? So what we recommend is 1 to 2 palm-sized portions of protein every time you eat. So what's a palm? Exercise the size and thickness of your palm. One palm, what, 2 eggs, 2 palms, 4 eggs. Just get you in a ballpark, okay? And you can adjust as your preferences and hunger and satiety cues and your results. You know, if you're a really active guy and you're like 250 pounds, you're muscular, obviously you're going to be on the higher end of these recommendations. If you're a 120-pound female, probably in the lower end. And it depends on how many meals you eat per day. I mean, you could go in a lot of different directions. These are just giving people a general start, a general guideline, and you adjust as necessary. So you have 1 to 2 fist-sized portions of veggies. You know, they don't have to get out measuring cups. They don't have to do math. They don't have to calculate how many ounces their chicken is, you know, or how many pieces of broccoli they're putting in. 1 fist. Perfect. That's all you need. Okay? 1 to 2 cupped handfuls of starchy carbs or fruit every time you eat. Easy way to keep it reasonable. What can you fit in a cupped handful? An apple, half cup of berries, half cup of cooked rice, that kind of deal, right? Small potato. No, and if you're a bigger guy, maybe it's 2 cupped handfuls. If you just trained, maybe it's 2 cupped handfuls. If you only eat a couple meals a day, you're on the higher end. It's pretty easy to manipulate to meet your needs, okay? 1 to 2 thumbs of healthy fats. A tablespoon of peanut butter, right? Small bit of nuts, something like that. Makes sense? And a low-calorie beverage. So it's just really easy, really manageable. Can be done anywhere at any time. You don't need measuring spoons, you don't need anything. So if people go to a restaurant and they want to figure out how much they need, they get their meal, you know, take half home because you're going to get a massive size portion, and you can kind of adjust based on stuff like this. Right? Does that make sense to everybody? Anybody have any questions on that? No? Awesome. So that's pretty much it. For more information, you can go to precisionnutrition.com. We have really cool information for guys, for girls, if you want to refer your clients out. We have great information for athletes and for fitness professionals like yourselves. So if you want to learn more about what we did today, we have something called the Precision Nutrition Certification. You'll learn a lot about not just nutrition information, but more importantly than that, how to coach. Because behavior change and coaching is what you're going to do. When you're out working with people, most of the time you're not giving a physiology lesson. And if you are, they're just glazing over, right? You need to learn how to communicate with people. In 4 years of undergrad and 2 years of my master's program, we covered very little of motivational interviewing and things of that nature. Well, that should be a much bigger part. That's what we do. We coach people on a daily basis. So we cover a lot of that in this program. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask. And that's pretty much it. Thanks for having me.